This is the weekend edition of the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Daily Gold Podcast. Well, last week, what a week for the equity market. The S&P 500 was up 1.7%. The NASDAQ was up 2.2%. Bonds declined. Yields rose. Emerging markets were up nearly 4%. And China was the huge winner on the week, up about 10%. Gold was higher, but silver was lower. Silver had been outperforming gold in recent months, so perhaps that's shifting. And the U.S. dollar index gained 2% on the week and is now less than 1 point from its recent high. This week, we have only one interview. We talked with David Morgan, the editor and publisher of the Morgan Report. Dave, in my opinion, is one of the top experts in the world on silver. Seriously, there are very, very few people in the world who know more about silver than Dave. He's written a new book on silver titled The Silver Manifesto. In this interview, we get to hear Dave's thoughts on the current action in the precious metals complex, as well as some historical and big picture thoughts relating to the secular bull market and silver especially. Now, let's get to the interview. Welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast, everyone. Right now, we're speaking with David Morgan, publisher of The Morgan Report, which you can find at silver-investor.com and themorganreport.com. Dave, let's get right into it. You know, gold and silver, they've kind of been basing or consolidating since November. I mean, some people use different terms. One day they look good, like they're going to start moving a lot higher, and then the next day they look like they're going to break lower again. It's really hard to get a handle on what's going on. What do you think's been driving these markets in recent months, and what's driving them right now?
Well, I think from the big picture perspective, we have to look at oil, because with this huge drop in the price of oil, it's affected everything, and I think it's affected the metals, and particularly the miners, because, for example, one of the best primary silver producers, which is leveraged to silver better than any other primary silver company, had its cost drop from about $22 all-in sustaining to about $14.50. So that's substantial that they're now in the profit zone, even with, you know, $16, $17, $18 silver. So the idea that I was, you know, answering and talking about, you know, 6 months earlier, or perhaps 9 months earlier in that time frame, about, you know, some of these silver companies are going to, you know, dry up and blow away eventually because they can't work at a loss forever. That's changed quite a bit for a lot of the companies. So that's number one. Specifically, what's, you know, driving the metals, you know, sideways and this kind of up and down in this pattern where no one really has much faith in the metals anymore. I mean, you get a little excited, you get a pretty big move, and then all of a sudden the next week, all that move's taken away. And then there's some announcement by the Fed or the European Central Bank or some politician, and the metals catch fire for a couple days maybe, and everyone thinks this is it. And then, you know, the following week it falls off again. And in fact, we have that kind of movement during the day. We had this jobs report, which was very negative, and the metals just took off in the morning, and by the close of the session we're back basically where they started. So that's the pattern. Why is it that way? I think it's primarily sentiment. I think that there's no new buying in the market. Everyone that's a believer is in. Some maybe are in over their heads if they use leverage. Some are in over their heads if they never put stops on their positions. Many people that believe in the sector are starting to not believe or sell at a loss or get out or not touch it or leave entirely or never come back and that type of thing. So I, you know, attribute it from my perspective mostly to sentiment. I mean, we have some situations that we've put in the report recently that are, you know, almost unbelievably good. I mean, and yet you don't see any kind of movement in those equities at all. And these are people the ones remaining are probably the savviest, most studied, best representative, really, you know, contrarians. And yet, even with that small, tight, very well educated, if you want, in this space, still are basically sitting, waiting, and watching.
Yeah, I mean, not to boil it down to a sentence or two, but at least from my perspective, it looks to me like we're in a situation where, at some point, you know, this base, it's either gonna fall apart, and then that could lead to a big sell-off and then a V-type bottom, or we're gonna kind of just slowly continue in the weeks and months ahead and kind of form this really slow, rounded bottom that, you know, people are just not really going to realize it until it just suddenly, slowly moves over certain levels. At least that's kind of what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, well, from the fact that it's been almost 4 years, I mean, the end of this month will be 4 years for the silver market from the top in 2011. I tend to think it's more the latter, where it's just sort of a rounding bottom, more of an accumulation pattern where you kind of see it go sideways, as I just described. And then it grinds up, and then people say, well, it's coming back down. It's done that 10 times. And it grinds a little bit higher, but not so much that people really pay attention. And then it goes sideways for a while, maybe falls off a little bit, sort of like a small stair step up. And these small stair steps just move up a little bit, and then it goes sideways and up a little bit and goes sideways. And all of a sudden, you're sitting there pushing, the top of the 19s in the silver market, and people really still haven't come on board. And they're thinking, wait a minute, how did silver get to, 1972? And I didn't buy any because I was waiting for it to drop back down into 14. And, that never happened. So there'll be a point, and that's the way I see it. Am I right or wrong? Time will tell. I don't know. I'm, got as much time. I got the gray hair to prove how long I've been in this market, but that's not the point. It does give you perspective. Does it give you the ability to call the market accurately 100% of the time? No. No one has that.
Right. I don't know how to phrase this question. I mean, we've discussed it a little bit, but I mean, the fact that the metals, kind of to your last point where you're leaning to that, that base saucer type bottom, I mean, the metals did not make a new low with a really strong US dollar. I mean, I think the US dollar was at 87 when gold put in its low, and, now it went up to 100. It's looks like it's back to 99 again, but, I mean, even the metals just can't get much traction to the upside. So, I guess a bear could say, well, that's bearish, whereas a bull could say, yeah, but look at this. The metals, they should have gone a lot lower given that huge move in the dollar, but they didn't. I guess it points to what you've already said, that, I mean, it's tough to get a read on it, and it points to, maybe we're going to have this range-bound saucer-like bottom.
No, Jordan, I'd really like to add on to that question because I think it's really one of the most important questions you can ask. Because first of all, you have a great contingency out there that says gold moves opposite the dollar. I mean, that's all they believe, and that's not true. You just proved it. Because if it's making a 100 on the dollar index and the low was established at 87, then by default it has to make a new low, and it did not. So now the question is, and I was asked this when recently, meaning the last few months, and I am a big proponent of the security, safety, safe haven status of both the U.S. dollar and gold or gold and silver, meaning that I'll call it the dumb money is going to default into the U.S. dollar because it is perceived to be the safe haven. And in a currency situation, yeah, it's the cleanest shirt in a hamper, all those crazy little sayings. However, gold is the ultimate. And so what you see is gold really isn't going down. And in fact, it's going up in a lot of different currencies. I mean, look at a gold chart in, euros, look at a gold chart in other currencies, and it doesn't look that bad. But in U.S. dollar terms, yes, but not making a new low, which is a very subtle but very important clue that the smartest money is accumulating gold and therefore relative to the U.S. dollar not making a new low. I'm pretty convinced that the low was in November of last year, but again, we'll have to see.
Right. Now, I want to go, let's talk about silver a little bit, and let's talk about the 1970s, because what's interesting is a lot of people, they compare, I mean, myself included, they compare this bear market in gold to that one, which we had in 75, 76, yet the two bear markets in silver have been quite different, or correct me if I'm wrong, because at least in price terms, the silver bear market then was not as severe as this one. I mean, why was that? And I mean, is this something that, are there any similarities or why was silver, why was that bear market in silver not as bad? I mean, is there anything we can take away from this going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had a great answer. I'll give you my best answer. Part of it has to do with the fact that silver through the early 70s was still perceived by many that were, let's say, awake as money. You got to remember that guys that are my age or older, and you know a lot of them are gone, knew that silver was still in the coinage in the U.S. And so once Johnson said that silver was too valuable to be used as money anymore, they immediately caught that and started to take, you know, 90% silver coins out of circulation. So I think that's why you saw the drop in gold in the 70s that you're referring to and didn't see the equal amount of devastation in the silver market, was there was that hangover of people in the know that were holding silver. And gold, remember, was not legal to own until I think it was 71. It was early 70s. You can correct me, but the idea is what's important more than the exact year. So gold was a relatively new market, and it kind of overshot, in my view, that, you know, once it was unleashed from the mandated 4222 and it shot up to almost 200 and then it dropped to 100. Silver people, let's say, looked at silver slightly different or maybe completely different than the gold market. Gold, especially at that time, was more looked at on an international basis. So it was, you know, France that was demanding their return of their, you know, fiat dollars for physical gold and others, but primarily France that was really instrumental in Nixon having to close the gold window. And so at that time, Jordan, I think my best answer is what I've already said, and just to try to sum it up, is that in those early days, gold and silver actually were not perceived to be as correlated as they are today, believe it or not.
Well, thanks for that answer. I think it's very interesting, and you brought up some things that I wasn't thinking about. In sticking on the topic of silver, I mean, I've heard other people talk about how silver historically is the best inflation hedge. I mean, speaking beyond what's happened in the last 10, 15 years and also the last bull market, I mean, it seems pretty obvious. I mean, do you want to answer why that is? And also, is there evidence of that even beyond the last 100 years?
Yes, great question. I kind of had an answer going in my head as we were discussing this off air. The bulk of evidence comes from Professor Roy Jastrom. And of course, I've read both his books a couple times, and he's probably published more than two. But The Golden Constant, which looks at gold from a commodity basket, and he asks the question, you know, how does gold do over long, long periods of time relative to commodities? Because gold was money in a lot of his study. And then after he examined gold thoroughly, he had the question, well, I wonder how silver does, you know. So he looked at silver during the same time frames as much as he possibly could. And what he discovered was that gold does best in a deflation. But again, remember, we're talking about several of these time frames that gold was actually the money in circulation. But silver did best in an inflation environment. And this is, you know, as you ask the question, is this, you know, 15 years out, the last bull market with the Hunt brothers, whatever? No, this goes throughout this long study that was around the 1200s or so, 1300s. So that's, you know, quite significant. So I, of course, use that fact, those facts that he so diligently uncovered, looking at all this data for, you know, centuries and coming to that conclusion. And I can't come to a different one. A fact is a fact. And, of course, it's pleasing to me because I'm still more in the inflation camp than I am the deflation camp, although I've never ruled out the deflationary camp entirely. But nonetheless, silver, I think, will be the predominant way to go when the system unravels further. It's already unraveling. I think anyone that's awake and aware is aware of that fact. Yet how it's manifesting certainly has the precious metals bulls perplexed, to put it in polite terms. Nonetheless, I don't think that it can be held back forever. It just cannot. So there will be a time, I believe, when the metals definitely reassert themselves as the premier store of value, wealth preservation at all.
Well, in talking about inflation there, it brings me to another question I've asked people in recent weeks. I know it's impossible to answer, but do you think inflation can slowly manifest, slowly take off, you know, slowly increase at some point, or do we need to see the economy kind of roll over a little bit, and then we need to see more radical policy out of the government and the Fed? Because it just it seems like what they've done so far, at least, it has not triggered commodity inflation. I mean, granted, we had the huge run up into 2011, so you know we're having a bear market. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just something I'm wondering, if we're going to see inflation slowly take off, or if something's going to happen and then the Fed is going to do something even more drastic. I mean, negative rates, or the government's going to, you know, spend a lot more money and finally spend on infrastructure or something. I mean, what are your thoughts on kind of, I guess, the triggers for, I mean, the coming rebound?
Well, thanks for that. And I'm not going to evade the question. I'm going to do my, you know, wholehearted best to give some insights. But it's all psychological, and I'll prove it. If you go back to QE1 and QE2, when the Fed started with this, you know, bailout, this what was referred to as QE1, where, you know, the financial crisis of 2008 had taken place, and we had to get the economy rescued, and, you know, we're going to do this package of, you know, money, quote unquote money, into the system and right the ship. You know, that went on. And then when QE2 was announced, I had already looked at the chart pattern, and for my Basic Plus members, said buy on a break at above 19. And silver started moving up rapidly. It moved from 19 to 26. And I actually started to exit the position at 26. And once at that level, QE2 was announced. Now, this reflects back to my answer a moment ago about Professor Jastrom saying that silver is the best inflation hedge out there. So the psychology then, and it's hard to believe, but Jordan, you were there. The psychology was, oh my goodness, the Fed is going to go to QE2, that's massive inflation. And what happened? Silver took off like a rocket. So I got back in, by the way, luckily. I got back in at 26 and rode it all the way up to 48 and exited the position. And, you know, I can name names and I won't, but there were some people that basically retired off of that move. Now, that fast forward to QE3. Now, one of the guys that works for me saw that happen in QE2, and then he made the presupposition that once QE3 will, you know, is announced, that it'll do the same thing. We'll have a repeat performance in the silver market. And I said, no, we won't. It's not going to happen. In fact, it will come down. And he goes, how do you know that? And I said, because no real inflation took off. That was anticipation of inflation. The psychology was inflationary, yet the reality was it wasn't there. And so now they have the ability to inflate QE4 and, you know, QE to infinity and on all these terms that we're familiar with today. So I'll circle full back. I don't want to belabor the point too much, but if anyone can get a handle on the market, on what will take place, it's going to be psychological. So knowing that, it could be instantaneous. It could be something the Fed does that thinks is super benign, that has, you know, not going to rock the market at all. And all of a sudden people say, not so much that it's inflation. It could just be, as James Sinclair, who says, it's a, again, he calls it a psychological manifestation. People say, I don't want a dollar. I don't want a piece of paper. I'd rather own a jar of peanut butter than a pile of $10 bills. It's going to hold its value more, or I find it to be more valuable, or a hammer, or whatever. I'm just using these corny examples because it's psychological. When that shift happens, that's when all heck breaks loose, because it just goes like wildfire throughout the system. People have herd instincts, and they see their neighbors buying like a second car. Why are you doing this? I thought you were, you know, going to add on to your house, or you're going to add to your business or whatever. It's, no, I'm getting out of the dollar. Don't you know? And once that psychology takes hold, it can't be stopped. Even the Fed, you know, they'll try stuff. I mean, they'll say you can only spend so much, or you can only get so much out of an ATM machine, or, you know, they may do a bank closure. I mean, they'll be trying all kinds of things to control the situation. But once it's out of control, believe me, it's out of control.
Now, Dave, given that we've had a 4-year bear market, I mean, severe as far as price and time, does that lead you to believe that the next up cycle that we're going to see is potentially going to be a lot longer than, I mean, people were thinking several years ago? I mean, I remember I was thinking, well, you know, I shouldn't count on anything more than 4 or 5 years. But I mean, given that we've had such a severe bear market, it seems like the next up cycle is more likely to be elongated than kind of an average or short cycle. What are your views on that?
They are changing. I mean, you know, I want to do my best. I'd love to be perfect, but I'm only human. I have, you know, change opinions on things and get more experience and learn new things. And that's what keeps us human. And one of the joys of living, from my perspective, is the ability to continue to learn your whole life. So if you go back to my early start, you go to like 2000, if you would have asked me then, I thought we had about a 10-year market. I figured 2010, 2011 would be it. And, you know, in a way, you could say 2011 was it. It's been it so far in the silver market and the gold market. I mean, gold peaked after silver in September of that year. Having said very concisely, Jordan, what you just indicated, I am starting to think that this could be much longer in duration than the normal, what I said once I read Jimmy Rogers' book, that it's about 17 years is the average commodity Super Bowl cycle. So if you start at 2000, that would imply 2017, and I've been saying that, you know, on and off for years. But I think it could go probably another 10 years. In fact, I'm interviewing a gentleman from that does Elliott Wave work. His name is Avi Gilbert. I met him at the PDAC, the Prospectors and Development Association of Canada, listened to his lecture, actually stood up and asked him a question, and then I was on stage next. Regardless, the point being is that he's looking for a 10-year continuation market. And I just finished my interview with him that will be published in the May edition of the Morgan Report. And unfortunately, it's not as, let's say, in-depth an interview as I usually conduct. He just was short on time, and, you know, I can't control anybody. But at least we got the key answers to several very important questions regarding where he sees the market going. He sees the market going significantly higher, especially basis the mining equities. He's more bullish on the mining equities than he is on the metals. And I say that because of the interview I conducted with him and being at the PDAC event listening to him. But he basically said, you know, close your eyes and imagine gold going up tenfold from here. So at the time, round numbers, gold was, you know, 1200. You can multiply it at zero on the end of that, and you're looking at $12,000 gold a decade out. So I'm not going to rule it out. Certainly, I'll use my old reliable statement, the market's no more than anybody. Certainly, that includes yours truly and Avi Gilbert and, you know, Jordan Roy, or any of us. I mean, but no, I think it's a very good question. And it's not that I want to just keep writing and, you know, keep the Silver Investor website up forever or any of that. No, I want to be here as the market dictates I should be here. And I am thinking that there will be the next upsurge, could be accelerating in, let's say, the 2020 timeframe. I so far think it's going to start in 2016, but maybe it'll go from 2016 to 2020. Maybe instead of being a big, you know, parabolic up move, there's a small parabolic up move and a consolidation and a double parabolic move. I don't know. The market knows, but that's a great question. And I think it's good from the perspective that, you know, we've probably hit peak gold or something close to it. Peak silver, some people say we have. Our work that's in the book, The Silver Manifesto, shows that peak silver will probably occur in the 2017 timeframe. And that's basis making some presuppositions that some of these mining projects that are in the works will come to fruition and mine, you know, be mining silver. And of course, those have not happened yet. So we're projecting sort of a best case or a realistic case, not a best case. Every one of these mines is going to produce, everyone's going to produce the maximum that they say. No, we didn't take that kind of an approach. We took an approach that this many are, you know, proposed to be probably 80% of them will come online and like 80% of them, and they'll produce about 80% of what they project, which is a lot more conservative analysis. But nonetheless, it does presuppose that there's a lot more silver out there that has been discovered and hasn't made it into a mine yet, but we think some will.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up your new book because I wanted to ask you about that, The Silver Manifesto. Dave, what, I mean, somebody who already, they've read a lot on silver, I don't want to say they know everything about silver, but they know pretty much everything on silver. What will someone like that, you know, what will the investors who've been in this market 10 plus years, who know a lot about silver, what are they going to get out of this new book?
I think I'll get some insights into some of the new technologies. Technologies are a driver for the silver market. Investment is the prime driver. So they'll get some insights there. They'll see why nothing's been fixed since 2008. Basically, this is a silver slash economics book. And when Chris and I decided to do this book, I was more of the mindset of doing, like, you know, silver only, like a very expanded Get the Skinny on Silver, my first book that I wrote by myself. And Chris kept arguing with me that unless we go into the banking system and how fractional reserve banking works and how that plays into fractional reserve bullion banking, and then explain the manipulation from a fact-only perspective, that we really had not done a you know, justifiable best effort for our readers. So, you know, that's a long answer, but it does entail more than the silver market. It's imperative to understand fractional reserve banking so you can really understand bullion banking, so you can really understand how the manipulation takes place and why. You also understand why there's no way out of this and why we really believe that the precious metals are probably some of the best asset classes you can hold. And just for the record, Jordan, and you know me fairly well at this point, you know, silver isn't the answer to everything. And that's why I wrote the last chapter, Beyond Silver, because certainly I look at the precious metals as being sort of a stepping stone to hopefully a better society, a better situation for all of humanity. The situation we're in now with what Chris Duane calls the death and debt paradigm is pretty accurate. You know, why are we having all these wars? Or, you know, I mean, all that goes on in the human realm is certainly beyond what we consider to be human. I mean, all great religions teach, you know, not to kill each other. And yet here we are. So this is important. It was important to me to put out philosophically that, you know, I'm not addicted to silver. There's more to life than, you know, the precious metals. And let's have some thought about where we go, you know, from here once we reestablish, and I believe we will reestablish some type of financial system that's based on honesty, because that's the crux of the issue. The whole system is based on dishonesty at this point in time, and it is only getting worse.
Right. Now, Dave, as we close, can you please tell our listeners how they can follow your work and subscribe to your services?
Sure. I think the easiest for the book is just go to our web page. It's thesilvermanifesto.com. You can order it on Amazon. And if you're in Canada or Australia, if we've made provisions where one of my assistants will actually mail the book for you. The website is silverinvestor.com, silver-investor.com. The YouTube channel is Silver Guru, and the Twitter feed is at SilverGuru22. I think I have some basic Facebook presence. I'm not too wired into the Facebook scene. I have nothing against anyone that wants to use it. I'm one of the most free market guys you'll meet. But for me personally, I don't find Facebook to be of much value for what I do, but I think there is some type of corporate Facebook page. I wouldn't go there as a first choice. I would definitely go to the website, silver-investor.com, and get on our free email list. And if you're so inclined, you can look over the different membership services, which is the basic service, the basic plus service, where you can see the trades and the videos that we do, and then the mastermind service.
Dave, thanks. Not to drag this on, but I chuckled as you were voicing your opinions on Facebook, because I saw a link the other day that said excessive Facebook use is related to depression. So I don't think it's a bad thing on your part.
Oh, thank you for that comment. I'll take that and smile.
All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining us. I and my listeners really appreciate it. And hopefully we can catch up again in the weeks or months ahead.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Jordan.